Clare Means Business, a Clare FM exclusive podcast with Josh Prenderville.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Clare Means Business. It's great to be back here with you as we look at crunching the numbers and getting to the heart of the business community here in this county and elsewhere. I suppose it's a really exciting time for many businesses throughout Clare, particularly those in retail and those in personal services. I know I'm looking forward to going to a barber's in the next few days myself. We know they're absolutely flat out this week in terms of seeing clients or welcoming customers back into their premises, and we just want to wish the very best of luck to them as they reopen, and we're looking forward to documenting how they're getting on maybe when things get a little bit less busy for them in the weeks and months ahead as things settle down. One thing that is a reoccurring theme and a positive one at that here on Clare Means Business in the last few weeks is jobs. We've heard of jobs announcements here in Clare. We've heard of more opportunities, particularly for flexible working due to the pandemic, available for people in the Banner. Well, now a new online portal has been launched specifically aimed at attracting employees to County Clare and the West Coast. Westernjobs.ie will help job seekers to find open roles across the region and assist employers in gauging the availability and depth of the skills that they require. With me is the CEO of the Western Development Commission, who are behind the initiative, and Quinman, Tomás Osiechón. Tomás, give us a flavour of what westernjobs.ie is all about, and has the initiative all been driven primarily by the COVID-19 pandemic?
Yeah, certainly the pandemic has driven a huge amount of change over the last year and 18 months, as we're all aware, but westernjobs.ie goes back somewhat further. Westernjobs.ie is effectively driven by the need, as had been identified to us by other enterprise agencies, the likes of the IDA in particular, and EI and others, to say that when they're attracting either foreign direct investment or other companies to locate in the West, the ability to say, we know that there are, for example, 100 people with software skills that will move if the right job is there, yeah, or 50 people with HR back office skills, and so on and so on. And that was one of the main drivers. Secondly, as you mentioned, in the context of the pandemic, I think research that we've carried out with NUI Galway, the results of which we had last year, and actually the second national survey is on at the moment. But those results clearly indicate that they're, first of all, that a number of people have moved west. So out of a survey, a significant survey sample of more than 5,000, over 7% had said that they had already moved out of Dublin. Secondly, that 23% of those were actively considering it, and a further 16% said they would consider it at some point in the future. So that gives you a sense of the interest and the appetite for roles in the West. And then on the flip side, a lot of the anecdotal evidence we had and from those that were speaking to us would say, yes, well, I will move for this job, but I want to know that I can build a career. And secondly, I want to know that my spouse can build a career. And I think that's been the acid test from our point of view, to ensure that when people move, they can build a career. And I think that's the greatest impact that the pandemic, and by extension, the shift to remote working, has had.
You've spoken to our Morning Focus programme in particular a lot, particularly in the past few months and in the context of COVID, as regards access to rural broadband and I suppose the overall shape of rural Ireland. And we know that that is changing in the context of the pandemic, as mentioned. So is the West, Clare and other parts of the West of Ireland, ready for this potential influx of people, as you say, maybe moving, whether it be from Dublin or other parts of the country? I mean, I know you've spoken before about concerns as regards rural broadband, shortage of houses maybe in rural areas as well. So are areas of Clare and elsewhere actually ready for an influx that an initiative like this might provide of people in the coming months and years?
In any scenario we look at, if we look at any region, whether it's urban or rural, there are both challenges and opportunities. And County Clare is no different, as indeed are all of the counties along the West Coast. So if you look at the positives, first of all, the West is poised in many ways on the brink of far, far more in the coming years. The scope for offshore wind and the shift to a low carbon economy is a huge opportunity, probably not only at a local, regional or national level, but in terms of EU energy security. So that's a very, very significant opportunity. The government commitment to balanced regional development, again, is a significant opportunity. So what can we do within that? Well, the opportunity to work remotely is very important because it means for the first time that not everybody that's in the same company has to work in the same place. So it means that people can change and move and bring their job with them, or that they can move and expect to find, as I mentioned earlier, the next job that comes along. And I think that's the crucial difference. So I think County Clare is very well positioned. As I've mentioned in a number of occasions, Clare County Council have been to the fore in this in developing hubs within the county, and the Western Development Commission is the lead agency for what was originally the Atlantic Economic Corridor Hubs Network and has now become the National Hubs Network. And the driver behind that is to say that when we did the research with NUI Galway, the challenges we found around remote working were perhaps isolation, the lack of motivation for people who don't, let's say, have company on a day-to-day basis, or otherwise the lack of an appropriate workplace. And we see hubs as addressing those issues as well as the broadband issues. So they are the positives, they are the drivers. And certainly as an organization that runs an investment fund and lending facility, even with COVID, we've seen huge growth in kind of scaling companies and companies that come online. So then on the flip side of that, what are the challenges? Well, certainly one of the most pressing challenges is, as we all know, there was huge congestion in Dublin, certainly prior to the pandemic. What we have to be careful of is that we don't simply move the congestion that was in Dublin to pockets in places like Clare, Mayo, Sligo, Galway. And there are always towns that everyone will point to and say, oh, well, I'd love to live there. And what's very important is to ensure as much as possible that this can be balanced. And that's one of the things that we're committed to doing in the Western Development Commission. And again, based on the fact that we have the Rural Hubs Network and the National Hubs Network, we believe that's very important because what that offers is a similar service in whatever place you go to. So we've seen examples across the West. And if you take, as it happens, Ballyhadrine, where the Western Development Commission is headquartered. Yeah. But if you take Ballyhadrine, for example, the shift in one or two new shops opening up, some food trucks arriving and creating that sense of anticipation about there are things happening here has literally made a change over the course of the year with the influx of remote workers. So I think for County Clare, first of all, within the region is very well positioned because in all of the research we do, you look at where the activity is happening. The activity is happening in or around Limerick City and its environments, and in or around Galway City and its environments. And then in between the two, you have Ennis and Shannon, that not only that are in the top 10 counties within the region that the Western Development Commission operates in, but also have key economic drivers. So you have a university either side, you have access to Shannon Airport. So County Clare is very, very well positioned, and indeed probably far better positioned than many of the other areas we would deal with.
Nevertheless, as you mentioned there, positives and negatives, what it does mean, and we've spoken about job vacancy rates in Clare on the rise, and indeed other parts of the West as well that have been on the rise in the last quarter and in the last year. What it does mean, maybe, for example, if a job does come up in Clare, that it's not necessarily people just within 10 kilometres or 20 kilometres or 30 kilometres that might apply for that job, that it opens up the market and potential, I suppose, applicants for jobs in Clare to almost anywhere, which would obviously have its positives and negatives for the workforce in Clare trying to, I suppose, get jobs in Clare as well.
Well, internationally, all the evidence would point to that Ireland is a very, very high, first of all, participation and then completion rate at third level. So in terms of the available skills base, Ireland is very, very well positioned. But again, I accept, and this is based on some of the research that the Western Development Commission would have done, looking at the COVID numbers, if you look at the Western region, and particularly if you look at what's the Atlantic Economic Corridor, all the way from Donegal to Kerry, two areas in particular have been very, very severely impacted. That's retail and tourism. And I'm sure people will be aware of that and fully understand that. But equally and disproportionately, young women have been impacted because they are bearing the brunt of the job losses in those sectors. So what again, going back to my earlier point about making sure that this is balanced, one of the key drivers for that is to ensure that if and where somebody finds themselves out of work, that we make that on a temporary basis. That again, And, you know, I'm keen to underline the role we see for the regional hubs in that going beyond just places you can work, but also places are a platform for service delivery. So in terms of what they call market activation or labor activation exercises, retraining, reskilling, and that yes. goes hand in hand with crucial services like childcare. So if we're particularly, because traditionally many of those that were, that the burden of childcare fell disproportionately on females. And again, a lot of the evidence and a lot of the discussion around the COVID campaign is that they have been disproportionately impacted.
Well,
and
as we you mentioned there,
sure that they're,
sorry,
to make sure that they're positioned to bounce back and be retrained and reskilled for whatever opportunities are
That's
available.
What I was going to ask as well. You mentioned the reskilling there, and I suppose I noticed that a lot of the jobs and companies which are engaging with the westernjobs.ie initiative, and it is great that they are doing that, they are in highly skilled roles, as you mentioned there. And I suppose what I was going to ask is, are you confident that the workforce that we have in the West, and indeed beyond that, can sort of cope with that? Because I mentioned job vacancy rates earlier. You know, as I say, when you get a lot of highly skilled jobs in an area, you mentioned third level education there, I suppose it's crucial that employees in those areas are able to fill those roles.
Absolutely, I would agree with that. And I think there are two answers to that question. There are, first of all, those that are in a position to take up those roles, and they may be currently in the area or they may be returning to the area. In either event, the most important thing is that they begin to drive economic activity. And the evidence we have points to the fact that when you begin to fill roles like that, that they have a spillover effect. So if you take, for the example, some of the people that will be working remotely, even if it is in high-skilled jobs that they might have come across on westernjobs.ie or working remotely in their local hub, then they begin to go into the pub for lunch. They go and get their haircut and the hairdresser, obviously all post-COVID. They get their car fixed with the mechanic. All of these begin to drive economic activity. And in the shorter term, they can begin to pick up some of the slack that has been created by, let's say, the fall off in tourism and indeed the fall off in retail. But I think we cannot ignore the fact that there will be significant change. So if you look, if I take the example of retail, on the plus side, a huge number of businesses have transitioned to, you know, to selling online and having the capacity to sell their goods or services online. That is certainly a positive. And that is something that will leave them well positioned for the imminent digitalization of all services. But equally, to go back to your earlier point, it brings with it challenges because now they're operating not only in their local village or town, but they're operating in a global marketplace because they effectively have to operate with the Amazons of the world if they're offering an online service, which means that they either need to provide something that's different or provide something that's on a par with what all the big services are offering. So I think we will see significant change, not only in the short term, as hopefully we move towards the end of the summer and things begin to open up, but I think over the next year and 2 years and beyond, we will see a lot of legacy issues that will arise from the pandemic and from COVID, some good and some bad, and we will have to react to both, much as we've had to do with Brexit and other significant changes like that.
Good stuff. Tomás Osiacón, CEO of the Western Development Commission, thanks very much for joining us on Clare Means Business.
Super. Thanks, Josh.
Yeah, Quinn Mannan, CEO of the Western Development Commission, Tomás Osiacón there. And that initiative, for those of you who are interested again, is available on westernjobs.ie. Now to move to something very much different and another positive story, though, in terms of local business. A Shannon company has been awarded €3.4 million in funding to revolutionise the treatment of complex bone fractures. The Austic project aims to deliver a type of material that will actually stick broken bone tissue together following a break, and it might even speed up recovery time. Chief Science Officer with PBC Biomed, who've been awarded the funding, is Gerard Inslee. Thanks for joining us, Gerard. Can you tell me briefly then about the Austic project and what this funding award from the Disruptive Technologies Innovation Fund will do to aid with it?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Josh. This is a very exciting technology and development that, as you say, we've been developing for some time out at the team at PBC Biomed in Shannon. What this is all about, we're a medical device company, and we make products that helps your bones heal more quickly. We all know that bone bone, when you break a bone, it can heal itself. However, when you get older and you start to get complications like osteoporosis, the healing process is slowed down, and in some cases not doesn't even happen at all. So what our product is, for the first time, we've developed a bone glue, which basically the surgeon, when he's faced with an osteoporotic fracture in the bone, can apply our glue as well as the metal that they usually use. This glue will hold the bone together so that he gets a much more effective treatment. Patients can get mobile much quicker, and recovery happens much sooner.
So how much sooner then are we talking? So say, just from, I've actually never broken a bone, which is a nice thing to be able to say. But for others, I know they might be in a cast, for example, depending on the type of break, sort of 6 to 8 weeks type time. So how much time does your work maybe eat into in terms of that recovery set period?
Yeah, for instance, you could break your ankle, for instance, and be expected, as you say, to be non-load bearing, depending on the patient, for 6 to 8 weeks or maybe 12 weeks. With this extra security of using a bone glue, the hope is that we will at least be able to cut that in half or even more before a patient will be able to get up and walk around. And that's very significant for the hospitals, for the patients, for back to work, etc. So it's, as the grant we have achieved has just said, it's a disruptive technology in that regard. It's going to change the way these treatments occur.
And you're obviously working very closely with the SFI Research Centre and DCU there as well. But just in terms of yourselves and obviously the local side of things out there in Shannon and in PBC Biomed, how many of the team will be involved in the project? It's obviously very significant outlay. So how many will be involved and what sort of areas of the project will you be looking at compared to, say, the DCU and the research side?
Yeah, so as you say, the consortium involves DCU, Professor Nicholas Dunn, and Dolman Technologies in Dublin, Dr. Martin Brugman, and ourselves, PBC Biomed in Shannon. We're a company here that are 25 people in total, and we hope to grow that number in the near future because of this project. And what we'll be involved in is making the actual formulation, designing the formulation, and then working with our partners to test out those formulations, whether it be the biology of the bone glue with DCU, or the way we're going to allow it to be delivered by the surgeon with Dolman. So about, I would say, 7 to 8 people will be full-time employed in this development in Shannon, with another 2 or 3 researchers in DCU and 1 researcher at Dolman. So it's quite a significant undertaking for us at PBC Biomed. But with this grant, it enables us to accelerate that. And with working with these partners allows us to really compete at a world level. Because you remember, there isn't any bone glue on the market globally.
Yeah.
So we would be aiming to be the first company to do that.
What would be the aim after that? So obviously there's a significant body of work, as you mentioned there, to undertake with yourselves and obviously as I say, DCU and Dolman as well. But in terms of post that, if you like, and I appreciate I'm looking into the future here. You know, when you do, hopefully, that everything goes well and the bone glue can come to market, what would maybe be the plan beyond that, and how soon in terms of number of years could we potentially see this applied in for example, our public hospitals in Ireland?
So yes, so the ultimate aim here is to get it into surgeons' hands so they can start treating patients. We would be seeing that the first indication for this in bone fracture repair could be as soon as 3 years away, 2 to 3 years away, all going well for us. Okay. So at that stage, once we've got the regulatory clearance, obviously, to do that, it would be in the marketplace and applied to patients.
I know the Department of Enterprise are obviously putting a lot of support and weight behind the project. Is it a vote of confidence, if you like, for PBC Biomed and indeed the Shannon area full stop? I mean, I appreciate it's not your own area, but we have heard of quite a bit of investment in other areas, the automotive sector, for example, in the last number of weeks in Shannon, as you're probably aware. And obviously now this news for yourselves, it's a real vote of confidence, if you like, at state level, not just for your own company individually, but for the area.
Yes, it is definitely. And as I say, we will have a number of people fully employed in this project. But it also the knock-on benefits because we're surrounded here by services, service industries that are based in Shannon and will be part of this project as well, all the way from our chemical reagent supplies to our facilities here, to even just the shipping of packages to and fro from the airport, et cetera. So the knock-on benefit for this is much bigger than just for us at PBC Biomed. And it does echo a good vote of confidence for the area and the ability of us in the Midwest here to be able to do these type of projects, because we have all the medtech device companies present here on the Western Seaboard. So there's no shortage of services and industries that can serve us and help us to get this to market.
And I appreciate that you're working with DCU in this instance, but I suppose one thing that's always talked about is the education facilities that are here in the Midwest. When you look at the likes of LIT graduates in particular, when it comes to the science side and research and obviously UL as well, and you could even go up as far as GMIT and NUIG. I mean, is that very helpful in this case when you're trying to, I suppose, apply for funding like this and sell yourselves, that there is this corridor, if you like, of graduates ready, willing and able to come on stream to potentially partake in projects like this, as you mentioned?
Yes, definitely, Josh. You got to be able to demonstrate that you can achieve what you set out to achieve on the grant form before you get you get approved for these grants. So that was a big part of how we told the grant committee that we would be able to do this. We already have a number of graduates from those institutions you mentioned on board here, and we'll be looking to employ some more in order to move this on to the next stage. We work with the institutions, we work with the universities, and also the research providers like iForm have been great and a very good service to companies like us, allowing us to be able to punch above our weight, I guess, in terms of the world stage when we have all of these very high-class institutions around us. That really helps us achieve what we're going to achieve, definitely.
Gerard Inslee there, and great to see a local company making such a difference in such a meaningful way. Incredible, really, to think that this technology could very well be available in our hospitals in just a couple of years' time. And best of luck to them out there in PBC Biomed as they begin that work. That brings to a close, though, this week's edition of Clare Means Business. I really hope you've enjoyed the last 20 minutes or so. As we've said, it's certainly an uplifting time for businesses across the banner, and we're really excited about continuing to follow how the reopening goes and the emergence from the pandemic now over the next number of months. For now, though, have a good week, and we'll speak to you next time here on Clare Means Business.
You've been listening to an exclusive Clare FM podcast presented by Josh Prendeville. Log on each week to hear Clare Means Business.